As we continue in our study of Jesus, the man who is also God, we want to talk today about the fact that the religion of Jesus is supernatural. It's beyond this natural realm. We live in a skeptical age and a materialistic age. We're skeptical about people. We're skeptical about the government. We're skeptical about advertising. Everything out there, we're skeptical about it. And we live in a group of people who are skeptical about religion. Now, to some degree, that's warranted because there are a lot of frauds and fakes out there. There are hucksters that are just out to get everybody's money. They have devoured widows' houses, as Jesus said of the Pharisees. They're flying around in jets while the members of their congregation and those who give them money are living on limited income. There are those who have deceived. There are those who have destroyed the faith of many by their own fall, by their own sinful actions. But Jesus calls for us to believe in spite of those folks. Not to believe in those people. Not to believe in the ones that are destroying the faith, but to believe in spite of the people who are destroying the faith. In spite of those people who are not what they appear to be. In spite of those people who are taking advantage of the gospel and trying to turn it into gain for themselves. Jesus calls on us to believe that we are not in control, but that there is someone greater, someone outside of us who is in control. He calls on us to have a faith that there is a God in heaven. And that there is a spiritual war going on all around us that we can't see sometimes. We see it spill over in the struggle between good and evil, between right and wrong. But we don't see the spiritual battle that's going on behind the scenes, that's going on in the spiritual world. But He calls on us to believe that there are angels of God and angels of Satan that are opposed to one another and at odds with one another. And that there are those who are there fighting for the right and those that are fighting for what is wrong. He calls on us to believe there is a whole other dimension, a whole other realm beyond the physical, beyond what we can see. And in fact, that when we look at another human being, we're not really seeing the person. We're simply seeing their body, their shell. He calls on us to believe not only that there are angels, not only that there is a God, not only that all of these things are going on unseen, but that we will live on after this life is over. That there is a whole other life, an eternity for us to live. And I wonder, even though we would perhaps verbally and mentally acknowledge those facts, I wonder if they don't make us a little uncomfortable at times. To know that there are things going on that we can't see and we can't hear, that we can't touch, and knowing that those things are there, I wonder if we struggle. I wonder if we really desire to have some hard evidence. If we, like Joe Friday on the old Dragnet shows, want the facts, just the facts, and we want evidence of those facts. We want those facts to be things that we can hold on to and show to other people and say, see, here's the proof. But the decision to be a Christian calls on us to make the decision to believe that there is something beyond nature, that there is something beyond this physical world that we live on, in and on. And I wonder sometimes if we're really prepared to take that step. Some people can't believe it. They choose the route of atheism. They can't believe there's a God at all. There are others who try to water it down and try to get rid of all of the supernatural that's all throughout the Scriptures. Try to say that, well, those people back then, they were just superstitious. Jesus didn't really cast out demons. What was really going on there was just those people were sick. They had diseases, and He knew some way to treat that disease. Many try to struggle to say that there is a God that started it all, but He doesn't play any active role in our lives today. He doesn't care about us in the way that He cared about people back then. Things have changed. And certainly we know that there are some things that have changed. Some will say, well, there's no way that there can really be a God that does all these things, because if there was a God that was doing these things, He wouldn't allow the evil to be triumphing throughout our world. He wouldn't allow the sin to continue. Of course, we know there's coming a day when He won't allow that sin to continue any longer. But for now, He's patient. He's long-suffering. He doesn't want us to perish. But I want to talk to you today about that spiritual, that supernatural, that beyond this realm religion of Jesus Christ. The one that He Himself was convicted of. And He tried to convict others of the reality of that spiritual realm, that supernatural dimension of our lives. You see, Jesus' religion has to do with God and Satan. It has to do with angels and devils. It has to do with good and evil, and a battle that goes beyond this world and this life. And Jesus had to battle against a group in the New Testament known as the Sadducees who didn't believe that. And we want to talk about how He meets this group of people. And today we're going to look in Mark chapter 12 at an encounter He has with them and how He defeats their flawed ideas of what the world and what religion is really about. First, let's get to understand those Sadducees. First, we need to realize that in Jesus' day and age and in the Jewish realm, there wasn't this separation of duties between the church and the state that we have here in the United States and in most of Western civilization. The people who were the high priests, the chief priests, they were Sadducees. And these people lived under what was known as a theocracy, a little different than a democracy. God was supposed to be the king over all. But the religious leaders helped to enforce God's law, helped to teach God's law. And they controlled a lot of not only the politics of the time, but also the religion. They controlled secular and holy. And too many times, the role of these Sadducees, these religious leaders, got the two confused and got the two mixed up. And they confused their political ambitions with the ambition of God to have the people follow His law. The religious role that the Sadducees played was one where they controlled and supervised the temple worship. They were those priests. They were the ones who made the sacrifices, who determined what sacrifices were valid and what ones weren't. They were the ones to whom when Jesus healed someone and said, "Go show yourself to the priest," they were many times the ones that those people had to go to see if they had been cleansed of their leprosy. When Jesus cleansed the temple Himself, It was these chief priests and elders, many of these Sadducees, who questioned his authority to do that. They controlled the Sanhedrin, which was the ruling council of the Jews. It was the one that determined if someone was a heretic, determined if someone was worthy of death or punishment under the law of Moses. And that was much of their responsibility. Of course, there were Pharisees on that Sanhedrin council as well. And we'll talk about them plenty as well in other lessons. But today we want to focus on the Sadducees. Now on the political side, they were rulers. This Sanhedrin council was more than just a religious group. It ran a lot of the day-to-day affairs. It controlled not only who was allowed to go into the temples and who could be kicked out and who could be punished, but it controlled things like taxes. And it selected leaders and even selected who was the next high priest and things like that. They had a lot of political power that the Sadducees controlled. They were also oftentimes the wealthy, the ones who could pull the purse strings. Well, if you don't want to do what we tell you to do, then we'll just cut you off. You don't want to obey our rules? Well, we won't buy anything from you. We won't sell anything to you. You'll be an outcast. So they controlled the political and the economic roles in society as well, because they were the aristocracy of the Jews. They were concerned about protecting the state of Israel, the nation of Israel. That was their big concern. They were less concerned with pleasing God than they were with keeping the nation of Israel the way they wanted it to be. They worked closely with the Romans and Herod. They were, in some ways, you might say, they were kind of traitors to the people, but in a way that they were protecting the people and the government of the Jews to give them continued power. They looked on any rebellion as a threat because it endangered their position. You see, the Romans were a group of people who were, they would conquer another nation, but then they would allow that nation to have puppet leaders who still had to do what the Romans said, but who would still rule and control the people. And they were afraid, of course, if there was a rebellion, that the Romans would come in and squash them. They'd put them out and bring in someone else to keep the people under control. In fact, in John chapter 11 and verse 48, they verbalized this very fear. They were so concerned about political instability that they did not want a Messiah to come, because a Messiah might threaten them. And here's what they said about Jesus in John 11. If we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him. And then the Romans will come and take away both our place and our nation. You see, everything was about them. Our place. Our nation. Not God's nation. Not that the Romans would come in and destroy the temple and destroy the worship of God and destroy the people of God. No, no. But he'll take away our position, our place, our nation. Not God's nation. But what about their beliefs? Well, their beliefs were very interesting. They denied God's control over men or circumstances. They had a very materialistic, mechanistic view of the way the universe worked. Just like a clock, you wind it up and it goes. You just leave it alone and it does its thing. And they believed that God had created us, yes, but He didn't do anything actively in our lives. And there are some people today that think a lot like these Sadducees. They believed that a man's success or failure depended solely on that man's efforts, and that God had nothing to do with it. They denied the spiritual world. They believed in neither angels nor demons. They didn't believe that there was such a thing as a resurrection. They believed only what they could see and hear and touch. Even though the Old Testament talked about angels and talked about demons or things like that, they didn't believe it. That was just superstition of those people who didn't understand any better. In Mark chapter 12 and verse 18, Mark describes the beginning of these people coming to meet Jesus. The Sadducees, who say there is no resurrection, came to him with a question. Now it's important that we understand what they believe before we look at their question, because their question is not a serious one. Their question is a mocking one. Because the very question that they're going to ask him has to do with things that they don't even believe exist. Josephus tells us that the Sadducees take away the belief in the immortal duration of the soul, teaching instead that souls die with the bodies. This was the Sadducees. As we've often teach the little children, because they don't believe in the resurrection, they're sad, you see. Because they don't believe it. And that would certainly make you sad if this life was all there were to consider. But the Sadducees, oh, these Sadducees, for them religion was not so much about spiritual matters or about eternal life or about the judgment of God. It was an instrument of social control and government. They used their religious standing for political ends, and they used religion not as a means of finding God, but as a tool for controlling people. That's what they thought religion was all about. How can we make the people do what we want them to do? And the Sadducees are not alone in that. A lot of people have tried to use religion in just that way. It's nothing unusual. People often do that very thing. But what happens when they run into the Son of God? What happens when Jesus and the Sadducees meet? Here in Mark chapter 12 is one incident between Jesus and the Sadducees that actually deals with this very issue that we're talking about. The Sadducees are trying to disprove a supernatural religion, and Jesus proves beyond the shadow of a doubt that you can't follow Him if you don't believe that religion is supernatural. He says, there's no other kind. So what is this controversy that they have over the resurrection? In verse 18, they come to Him and they have this question. They say, Teacher, Moses wrote this. If a man's brother dies and he leaves a wife, but no children, then that man has to marry, the widow must be married by that man's brother to bring children to his brother. Well, there's no doubt about that. That's what Moses wrote. That's what the law was. That if a man died and left no heirs, his widow was to marry his brother and they were to have offspring for him. The first child would be his. And then the brother could have his own family. They say there's seven brothers. Now, you know, I suppose it's quite possible over the centuries that this had actually been a real situation that happened. But whether it's hypothetical or whether this really was someone specific that they're talking about that this really happened to, didn't really matter because they didn't care because they didn't believe in any of it anyway. But they say there were seven brothers. The first one married, died without any children. The second one married her. He died without any children. On and on down the list, all seven of them. Finally then, the woman died. No children, seven husbands. In the resurrection, whose wife is she going to be? Because all of them had her at one time as wife. Oh, this has probably stumped those Pharisees that believe in the resurrection and angels. And It's probably stumped so many of them. They've probably never come up with a good answer for this. And here's this Jesus. We're going to ask him this question, and we'll stump him too. He won't have a way to answer that. But they were wrong. They were really wrong. So whose wife is she going to be? And Jesus says, well, kind of what I wanted him to say is, you're a bunch of idiots. And that's almost what he says. He says, you have erred. You are mistaken. You are wrong. You're deceived. You've been fooled. And he says, here's why. You don't know the Scriptures, and you don't know the power of God. Now, God could deal with that situation any way He wanted them to deal with it. But Jesus answers the question. He says, verse 25, as we look at the problem that they really had, Jesus explains it. Now, they're ridiculing this whole concept of, well, if there's a resurrection, what are we going to do about a situation like this? They're really mocking. You see, there's no way you've got to, what would you do? She can't have seven husbands. God wouldn't allow that, would He? So, well, we just got to do away with the whole thing. But He says they're badly mistaken. Horribly wrong. Because they didn't know the Scriptures. And then He enlightens them as to the Scriptures. First He says, there's not going to be any marriage in heaven. There's not going to be any marrying or giving in marriage. We're going to be like the angels in heaven. Now, He didn't say we're going to be angels. Notice that distinction. He said we'll be like those angels. The angels, in other words, don't get married. They don't have those kinds of relationships. Because it's a spiritual realm, not a physical realm. So there's not going to be any marriage. There's not going to be any children. There's not going to be any baby angels up in heaven. There's not going to be any babies born in heaven. It's not like here, is the first thing He tries to get them to understand. But then He tries to explain it a little further. Now, let me tell you about some evidence for the dead being raised. Let me give you the proof for that, He says. You believe that God said, I am the God of Abraham and the God of Jacob and Isaac. You believe He said that. So, here's the problem. God can't be the God of a dead person. Because to be God means to be worshipped, to be adored, to be loved. Something dead can't do those things, can't worship, can't love, can't adore, can't obey. It's dead. So Jesus says, since God says, I am the God of Abraham. Now, He said this to Moses some 400 or 500 years after Abraham died a physical death. But He still says, I am Abraham's God. We still have this relationship. He still worships me. He still obeys me. He still loves me. I'm still His God. 400 years after His death, how's that possible? Because Abraham was still alive. Isaac was still alive. Jacob was still alive. Not living on this earth, but still living. He in essence says, my relationship with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob continues. It's not over. If they'd look close, they'd see the resurrection in the plan of God. But they didn't look at it. They underestimated the power of God. They underestimated the Scriptures. The God who had the power to create man in the first place should certainly have the power to give that life back once it had been taken away. But we want to talk about today. Oh, there's not much of a group that would call themselves the Sadducees. But even in the church today, there are Sadducees of a sort. These are the modern-day Sadducees. They don't call themselves that, but they live that way. There are two groups here. The first is a group that really does deny the supernatural. There are those who would try to remove the supernatural from the Bible. They'd try to take away all the miracles and take away all of anything that has to do with heaven or another world after this one or anything of that nature. They don't want, like any of those things. They keep all the good stuff. They keep all that moral teaching that Jesus did, and they teach the lessons about relationships and, you know, all those things about goodness and living a righteous life and staying away from sin. But they get rid of the bad stuff they don't like, which is all of those things like resurrection and an afterlife. Even to the point of many denying the resurrection of Christ. And it's sad to think that there are those who would call themselves Christians that would do that. But there are. And they say, well, Christ just rose symbolically in the teaching of the apostles as they continued to carry on His teaching. Well, let me tell you, if He didn't really rise, then we're wasting our time. Because if He didn't rise, we're not going to rise. There'd be no point to any of this. But there are those that deny it. Jesus wouldn't allow that in His day. He said to those Sadducees, "You are wrong." And He would say the same to them today. The religion of Jesus is a supernatural religion. He believed in demons and angels and Satan. Of course He believed in Satan. He knew him personally. He had a face-to-face encounter with him. Yes, he believed. His life was tied up with miracles. From birth, well, from conception, all the way through to His resurrection. Throughout His existence here on this earth, there were miracles after miracles. Now again, we understand that miracles are not the only thing that makes something supernatural. We'll touch on that more a little bit. Jesus spoke about heaven and hell. He spoke about a resurrection of people and a divine judgment. He didn't believe this nonsense that this is all there is, this materialism. He didn't believe that. He believed in His own resurrection. He talked about it. He looked forward to it, prophesied about it. He was counting on it. And then He did it. But there are also those, and I'm afraid sometimes we may be tempted to fall into this category, who we would never reject the supernatural. We would never deny those things are in the Scriptures, or that there's a heaven, or that there are angels in it, but we ignore it. Because we don't think that has anything to do with our lives today. It doesn't have anything to do with me today and how I'm living, so I'm just going to ignore that and pretend it's not there practically, even though I'll acknowledge that it does exist and it is out there. But it's not going to affect my life at all. See, there are those that just don't pray because, well, they believe God's up there, but He wouldn't care about me. He wouldn't care about my concerns, so I'm not going to pray to Him. I'm not going to ask Him to do anything. There are those that don't sing with the Spirit. They may mouth the words, but they're not really putting heart and soul into it. It's just lip service. They just ignore those things. They don't thank God when He blesses them. They don't blame the devil when he causes trouble for them or tempts them in some way. They just go through the motions, go through their daily lives, as though those things aren't out there. But that's not the religion of Jesus. That's not what He brought. Jesus believed strongly in prayer. He believed in the power of God to hear that prayer and answer that prayer and to act on our lives in our world. Now, don't confuse the miraculous with the supernatural. I'm not saying that God's going to perform miracles for us today. That was a very specific thing that He did for a very specific time, for very specific reasons. But that's not all there is to being a supernatural religion. I'm arguing that we need to recognize the supernatural in our lives from day to day. We need to recognize that God is here right now, but not just when we're assembled together to worship Him, that He's with us every day, every night, all day, all night, that He sees and knows all that we do, and that He is just a prayer away from being able to send us aid, encouragement, peace, comfort. He's there, just a prayer away. And He wants to be part of our lives. He wants to have a relationship with us, just like He had a relationship with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. He wants us to have a relationship with Him. So where do we get it wrong? Where do we go wrong and fall into the traps of the Sadducees? If we don't know the Scriptures. When we don't know what the Bible says, we're going to miss what it means. We forget about the promises made to us about the supernatural. We forget about the promises about prayer and that Jesus will hear our prayers and God will hear our prayers and they'll come and answer those prayers. Jesus says, whatever you ask Me in My name, I will do it. We forget that the battle between good and evil, even though Jesus drove the final nail in Satan's coffin, so to speak, Satan, even though he's going to be defeated, he's doomed eternally, he hasn't given up the fight. He's not a quitter. If there's one thing we can learn from Satan, it's don't quit. He won't quit, and we can't quit either because we've got to keep fighting him. The light and the darkness, heaven and hell. We forget that Jesus teaches us all of that. And then we make the mistake sometimes of limiting God. Some of us, I'm afraid, believe in a God who's too small. He's a God who can't do abundantly above all that we ask or imagine. If you're serving that kind of a God, get a bigger God. Get a better God. Get one who can do what God said He could do. You see, the mistake that the Sadducees made, Jesus said they didn't know the Scriptures and they didn't know the power of God. And if we don't know the Scriptures, or we don't know the power of God, we'll fall into the same traps they did. He hears us. He answers our prayers, not with miracles, and not always the way we want Him to answer them. But He cares about us, and He loves us, and He is involved in our day-to-day life. And He affects our lives. If not, then why not? If you're here and you're a Christian, but perhaps you've had too small of a God, perhaps you haven't trusted in a God who can do things that are beyond your ability and beyond your expectations, perhaps you're not a Christian, perhaps you've denied Jesus, denied His resurrection, thought that just couldn't happen, people can't come back from the dead. He did. And if you'll believe it and follow Him, you can too. If you're here and you have a need to respond to God's invitation for any reason, please respond as we stand and sing.